I left off with the Divine Energy series with Isis Suffering, and that was posted back in October of 2022. It has been archived in the community theater, as well as there's a copy in the podcast. So definitely you want to go back, you want to listen to that if you don't remember the Divine Energy series. But I'm being led by the Spirit to pick up where I left off. So I'm going to go ahead and start where I left off today. Today's topic is about the contendings of Horus and Set. But before we get into that story, I always would start by kind of reminding you of other deities that existed and who also took part in the story that we're going to discuss today. So I'm going to start with first Neith. Neith is one of the oldest deities of ancient Kemet within that pantheon, and she was often depicted as a woman wearing a tight dress and a red crown of Lower Egypt. She is the eldest mother of the gods, so she would be known as that great mother. I remember when I tried to do a TikTok about the great mother, and I was sharing some very good information that I had channeled. And of course, the trolls must have reported that video, and so they took the audio out. Where I'm going to go ahead and pick up with these two very powerful, powerful goddesses today. And her symbol was a click beetle. She had two arrows that crossed on her shield. The click beetle is usually found near water, so that's linking her to the creation of the world. Because remember, the world emerged out of the waters of Nun. So she is a creator. She actually created Re and the sun god's arch enemy, Apophis. So saying that Neith spat into the primeval waters and that it transformed into the chaos monster that they called Apophis, who nightly challenged the rule of the sun god. She created snakes and crocodiles in the same manner. So she was literally the creator of the world. And I know this is totally different from the religious perspective, where they always teach you that God is a man. So in ancient times, they knew that a creator, that was a feminine force. The mother of men, she was also considered the mother of crocodiles and the crocodile god Sobek. So at the site of Esna, she was given the title, the nurse of crocodiles. And they also found statues of a woman who had two large crocodiles, one on each breast. Again, noting that she was the mother of crocodiles. In funerary beliefs, if you look at the pyramid text spelled 606, Neith is described as protecting the body of Osiris alongside Isis, Nephthys, and Serket. Eventually, this role shifted into all of the dead. So these four goddesses also each assigned a side on the coffin, the cardinal directions, and the responsibility of protecting the four canopic jars, respective guardians known as the four sons of Horus. Neith was given the east, headed proctor of the stomach. These four female goddesses can be seen often in a protective manner with their arms outstretched on boxes and shrines that held the canopic jars. Neith was also believed to be the inventor of weaving. So she was the one who was associated with mummy bandages and shrouds. So when you see all of the dead that they're going and disrespectfully digging up, you notice that they're all mummified. That was something that took place all across this planet. Neith was also associated with weaponry. So she was known for hunting, with warfare, given that among her many titles that she holds, she was known as the mistress of the bows and ruler of arrows. Her names included Neith Fights, Neith is Victorious, and by the time of the Old Kingdom, she was considered a wise veteran and the dependable mediator of the gods and between the gods and humanity. So alongside the Old Kingdom depictions also represented Neith as one of the fierce manifestations of the Eye of Ra. The next powerful goddess that I want to discuss today, her name is Hathor. Hathor is a goddess of the sky, of women, of fertility, and of love. And the name Hathor literally means the estate of Horus. Her principal animal form was that of a cow, which symbolized her maternal and celestial aspect. Although her most common form was a woman wearing a headdress of cow horns and a sun disc, she could also be represented as a lioness, a cobra, and a sycamore tree. She was strongly associated with motherhood. Hathor was closely connected with the sun god Re of Heliopolis, whose eye or daughter she was said to be. In Upper Egypt, she was worshipped with Horus. She is the patroness of foreign parts and of many minerals won from the desert. So they called her the Lady of Turquoise, the Lady of the West, and the patroness of the region of the dead. Women aspired to be assimilated with Hathor in the next world. As a sky deity, she was the mother or consort of the sky god Horus and the sun god Re, both of whom were connected to or with kingship, and thus she was the symbolic mother of her earthly representatives, the pharaohs. She was one of the several goddesses who acted as the Eye of Ra, Ra's feminine counterpart, and in this form, she was a vengeful aspect that protected him from his enemies. Her beneficent side represented music, dance, joy, love, sexuality, and maternal care, and she acted as the consort of several male deities and the mother of their sons. Hathor crossed boundaries between the worlds, helping the deceased souls in the transition to the afterlife. More temples were literally dedicated to her than to any other goddess, and she was one of the deities commonly invoked in private prayers and offerings, particularly any prayer that was dedicated or desiring children. So if you wanted to get pregnant and you couldn't get pregnant, that's the deity that you would invoke, Hathor. The reason why I went over these two very powerful deities is because they play a role in the story and of this battle that I'm entitling The Contendings of Horus and Set. So let's go ahead and get into the story where we left off, if you don't remember. And again, I encourage you to go back and listen to the podcast that was dated October 2022, Isis Sufferings. We left off with her suffering, and she was with a young child, and her brother Set had basically stolen the throne and taken over and chased her off into the woods. Well, now some time has passed. So we're picking up where now Horus, which was also known as Heru, who was Isis and Osiris's son, it's time for him to take the rightful rulership, his rightful place on the throne. So we're in a court scene. And this trial has been going on now with the gods for over 80 years. And the judge that's presiding over it would be the sun god, Re, or Ra. And they've been disputing. And they've been going back and forth on who should be the rightful ruler over the throne. Some of the gods felt like Horus was just too young, that he was inexperienced, that he would not be able to rule properly. Some of them talking about how Set had traveled with Ra on his boat and how they had repulsed the sun god's enemy, the old serpent demon Apophis. And so Set had experience. He had years above his nephew. Others felt like, no, if Osiris had a son, his son should become the ruler because he's the one that's in the direct line for rulership, especially since everybody by now figured out that Set killed his brother. And that was just terrible and underhanded. So again, they just couldn't figure out what they were going to do. So the divine court decided to turn to the advice and wisdom of the ancient goddess Neith. And of course, Neith, being the strong, powerful, wise being that she is, she was in favor of Horus. And she felt like Horus should take the rightful rulership because he's in the direct line of Osiris. However, she's fair, so she said, okay, Horus, you take over, and Set, you'll be compensated with treasure and two Syrian goddesses, Anat and Astarte. Her decision was also coupled with a threat, and she warned them that they should not take it lightly. And she said that if Horus was not allowed to succeed the throne, that the sky was going to fall on the Egyptian people. Of course, the gods did not listen to what Neith said, and they continued to bicker and to argue, and they still couldn't decide what they wanted to do. They just didn't take her seriously at this point because they figured Big Mama, she'll just make these threats, but she ain't gonna do nothing else because she loves us, and they know she's full of love. So at this point, the guys got bored by the lengthy proceedings and they decided that they wanted a change of scenery. So they decided that they were going to relocate to an island. And since everyone already knew that Isis was biased towards her son Horus because she'd been just interfering the whole time and wouldn't stop trying to testify, they said, "You cannot come to the island. We need a change of scenery. We need something different to happen to figure out who we want to go with." So the old ferryman, Nimti, refused to allow her to cross over on the ferry to get from the mainland to the island. Isis, of course, is the mistress of disguise. So she transformed herself into an old hag, and she fooled old Nimti into taking her over to this island. And when she arrived to the island, she transformed again. She shapeshifted into a beautiful young woman. And then she started to try to seduce Set. And she claimed to have been married to a cattle herder who had died, who left her with a young son. And she told him that a stranger had turned up and tried to steal the cattle and throw her son out of their house. Set immediately condemned the behavior of this stranger, not realizing that this story was about Isis and Horus. So when he condemned the behavior of the stranger, he literally passed judgment on himself. And he let everybody know that he was guilty himself, and they found him guilty for confiscating Horus's inheritance. And at that point, Horus was awarded the throne. And they seemed like everything had been decided, but of course Set wasn't going to go down that easy. So he appealed to the challenge, and he went to Horus and talked to him. He said,
"Look, come on, man. Why don't you fight me like a man?
You know how men are.
Let's fight like a man and let's do a contest and see who's greater amongst us. Why don't we do an underwater contest where both of us take the form of a hippopotamus and we go underwater, and the person that can't stay underwater for at least 3 months will lose his claim to the throne."
Now, once again, Set was being underhanded here because we all know, well, people who've been studying knows that old Set has the upper hand in this situation because he's over the hippopotamus. Isis knew this, so she got upset. She said, "Okay, you at it again, huh? You right back being nasty and evil again." So what she decided to do was when they went under the water, she took a copper harpoon and threw it into the water trying to kill Set while he was under there because she knew he'd just go under there and literally live under that water forever because he was sneaky. But what happened was the harpoon accidentally embedded itself in Horus. At this point, Isis is panicking, and she had to use her magic to withdraw the harpoon. She got it out of her baby, but then she threw it in again, and this time it did hit Set. It made contact with Set. Set used guilt. And
come on now, you know I'm your brother. You know I love you, Isis. You know you shouldn't be doing this stuff to me.
Isis felt sorry for him, forgetting about how he killed her husband, how he dismembered her husband, all the evil, sneaky things he'd done. She felt sorry for this man, and so she used her magic and she withdrew the harpoon. At this point, Horus flew up out of the water in a fit of rage, not realizing this was his mother behind all this stuff, and he sliced this woman's head off. When he sliced his mother's head off, she turned into a flint statue. And once he realized what he'd done, he panicked, he grabbed his mother's head, and he ran, and he fled to the western desert. Set, all of a sudden, tries to become this sweet, wonderful guy by revenging his sister's decapitation. And he tracked down his nephew. And he found him lying under a tree and gouged his eyes out. When he gouged his eyes out, lotuses grew in their place. And the cow goddess Hathor had to come and cure Horus's sight. And she did this by using gazelle milk. Well, at this point, the guys realized that things have just gotten out of control. All hell has broken loose. So they summoned Horus and Set back to the court. And when they went back to court, a banquet was thrown. So the night before the court date, Set, once again being evil and sneaky and underhanded as he always has and will be, sexually assaulted his nephew Horus, trying to publicly humiliate him the next day in court by displaying his strength and his superiority by laying his semen within Horus's body. However, Horus managed to catch Seth's semen in his hands that was carefully positioned, and he ran back to his mother, who by this time had been magically restored, and he showed her what his evil uncle had done. Well, Isis knew what Seth's plan was, so she cut off her son's hand and disposed of it in the marshes. She realized that Seth was trying to publicly humiliate this child the next day by calling forth his semen, which would have been in her son. So she threw it out. And what she did was she said, okay, you want to play nasty? I'm going to play even nastier. You go low, we go lower. So what she did was she took her son's semen and put it in Seth's favorite meal. And she set it for him to eat. Seth ate the food, which was his lettuce, not realizing that Horus's semen was in it. And child, when they returned to the courtroom the next day, Seth tried to, of course, publicly humiliate him by telling everybody what had happened the night before, not realizing that Isis has already worked it all out behind the scenes. So the guys were like, what you talking about? So they said, let's call forth the semen, which is this life force. Let's call it forth and see where it is and see who's telling the truth here. So when they begin to call it forth, Seth's semen was speaking from the marshes. And then they called forth Horus's semen, and honey, it was speaking from inside of Seth. And at this point, a gold sun disk emerged out of Seth. And on that note, you know what time it is. It's time for a spirit break. Indicating that divine origin, and was on top of his head. Y'all, Seth was so angry, he didn't know what to do because he obviously had lost the race. He embarrassed himself, and everybody was siding with Horus. Now, at this point, there was one more challenge. Seth got angry, all right? He got mad. Of course, as you know, these stories were told thousands of years ago, and anytime there's stories and gossip that spreads around, the stories tend to change. So there are two different endings to this story. I'm going to go through both. Under the first ending, this is how the story goes. Seth got angry. He got mad. He challenged Horus to a boat race. It was decided that the boats had to be made of stone. Horus craftily built his little boat out of pine and painted it to look like stone, while Seth ran off and got the biggest mountain peak he could find, and he sank to the bottom. Therefore, he lost the challenge. This enraged Seth, who transformed into another hippopotamus and ran and smashed Horus's boat. At this point, Osiris was fed up with this whole ordeal, and he sent a threatening message from the netherworld, and Horus was finally confirmed as the rightful heir to the throne. At this time, Seth's strength was not overlooked, and Ray employed him as thunder in the sky to keep all the evil at bay. Now, that's the first ending. That's the happy ending. Now, this is the second ending, which I really believe is what truly happened. After Seth's boat sank into the ocean, Osiris did send a message. That's true. At this point, Horus kills Seth. There was a battle that took place at Elephantine. And in this battle, Horus dismembered Seth the same way Seth dismembered his father. Isis fed Seth's bone to the cat, and his fat was fed to the worm. I got a funny feeling that's probably the true story, because You know, people always want a happy ending, and next thing you know, they want to tell it a certain way. But either way, this is the contendings of Horus and Set. Now, if we take a closer look at this story, because it was a lot of stuff that happened in this thing. Again, it went on for years, 80 years on trial. You have to remember that these were gods we're talking about. So they live infinitely. It's not like a human. 80 years in our life, you would have been dead by the time the judge figured out what he was going to do. So we know you're dealing with ancient, powerful, spiritual forces. These are not people. Which is why they're able to transform and they can shape shift and they can do all types of things. That's how they're able to bring their bodies back. When they gouged the eyes out, flowers grew. You know what I mean? This wasn't hundreds of years for these flowers to pop up. You're talking about instantly. You're seeing in this story where people are coming back. They're resurrecting people and all types of stuff. So you know you're dealing with some powerful ancient forces, probably on a higher dimension. Because when you go into higher realms, more things are possible. Spirits live longer and they have a lot more power. So we know that this is in a higher realm that all this stuff is taking place. There are some really good things in this story, though, because as you can see, if you go back to the beginning, when Set overthrew his brother and did all these terrible things, and then eventually the son was born, and the son had to be born through a magical way in order for him to come forth, which some people do believe that Horus was nobody but Osiris reincarnated, because you know you don't die, we typically just reincarnate. The battle continued after Set had already thought he won over his own brother, and it continued through the sun, which is very important there, which is why you need to have children, you need to reproduce so that the story goes on. Well, at the point that you start reproducing, the story pretty much ends. But it's pretty much showing you again how good will eventually overcome bad. It also shows you how sometimes you can't fight people straight up. You have to use wisdom. Isis, again, is that goddess of wisdom and magic. As she kept interfering within all these battles over the years, her interference ended up helping in the long run. Like how when her brother tried to sexually assault her son. Well, she had to use wisdom in that situation and basically outsmart him. But the way that she did it, she fed him something versus violating his body. After listening to some of our ancient stories about these gods and goddesses, now you see why we were undefeatable and unconquered for such a long amount of time. The reason why is because they did not play. It was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. There was no forgiveness. There was no turning the other cheek. There was no being a doormat. If somebody come wanting your tunic, give them your cloak and your tunic and all the silly stuff. All that stuff came whenever these colonists popped up. They took a lot of those ancient scriptures and they reworded them, they rewrote them, and then they created a Bible. And when they did this, they understood that if we don't get these native people out of their indigenous spiritual practices, we will never rule over them. Like I told you, when Isis found out that Set had sexually abused her son, there was no forgiveness there. She went lower. She did not forgive him. She did not turn the other cheek. You hear about this stuff all the time in these churches with these old pedo pastors touching on the children. What do? The parents stay right there in the church. They forgiven the preacher. We did a whole video a few years back about how forgiveness is a sin. Why? Because when you start forgiving people, you're literally assuming their debt. If you look at natural law, whatever you sow, ye shall reap. What people have been doing when they're abusing you, they're misusing you, they're doing all this stuff, and you turn around, I forgive them. I forgive you. What you're really doing is you're assuming the debt. So that person is never being chastised. They're never learning their lesson. And they just keep going on and hurting people and abusing people and stealing and killing and pillaging and doing whatever they want to do because you keep forgiving them. And if you look at all these religions, that's the whole tenet behind it. They want everybody to forgive. They want everybody to forgive. That's what they keep telling you. You've got to forgive now. You got to forgive. You got to move on. Forgive and forget. No, you don't. You need to remember. Power is in remembering. How are you going to ever grow? How are you going to ever be successful if you keep forgetting everything? If you keep forgiving everybody that hurts you? Do not forgive these bastards. You should want them to pay, whether in this life or the next life. They need to pay for what they've done, because if they don't, they're going to continue to do it. And that's how you end up in a cycle of abuse. That's how you end up with abusive spouses, and the wife or the husband, and whichever one that's not abusive, just keeps forgiving and turning the other cheek and keep praying. I'm going to pray for you. No, do not pray for these people. You need to pray. If anything, you need to be praying that they get their just desserts. Trust me, if the colonists would have gotten their just desserts immediately, then they would have stopped their evil and wicked ways. But as long as people think that they can abuse you, they can step on you, they can do all types of stuff to you, and you're just going to sit there and absorb it like a sponge and never fight back, then guess what? They're going to continue to abuse you, because they have no reason not to. That's the reason why narcissism is running rampant today. It's because nobody's practicing the ancient way. Nobody remembers. They got rid of all the stories. They burned the books. They took everything and hid it under the Vatican. So most people don't even know these stories. So if you're interested in learning the ancient way, you want to learn more, you need to start tuning in, you need to follow. I also offer a exclusive podcast membership. I'll put the link in the description box below so that you can become an exclusive member and hear more podcasts that I'm not able to give out to the public. All this information, I can't give everything to the public, because I already know there's trolls and agents who follow me religiously. So if you want to know more, definitely you want to do that. You want to check it out. And I'm going to keep coming to you guys with more of these ancient stories of our past so that you understand, overstand, and understand who you are, where you are, and how you need to be conducting yourself. Because trust me, Christianity ain't going to get you nothing but a willy lump lump. And you're going to end up in a very bad situation. I know. It wasn't until I left that mess alone, burned my Bible, and started following the ancient way that all of a sudden all these demons and stuff that was in my life got kicked the hell out. And trust me, I'm living a much better life today than I ever lived when I was calling on Jesus.
The best radio station in the world.
In the world.
Is right here. Right now.
The Golden Race, conscious radio for the conscious community.